It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, voting is just around the corner for nonpartisan primary elections in Wisconsin. We'll find out when and how to vote.
First, there's been a lot of action in the state legislature so far this week as lawmakers try to wrap up their work before the session ends. Yesterday, the state assembly passed bills that would dial back land and water regulation for property owners, and the Senate passed a bill to allow online voter registration and eliminate voter registration deputies.
Sean Johnson joins us now from the state capitol to give us the details on all these bills. He's Capitol Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Sean, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Let's hit the road first. A long-running debate over how to pay for road maintenance, repairs, and building in Wisconsin. A plan in the assembly, it sounded like people were kind of liking. A vote coming up? Not just yet. So, first of all, what did they have on the table there with this county tax idea?
Hey, I mean, you're right. They had this very rare bill that would actually spend some money on roads, and it wouldn't spend a whole lot of money, and it wouldn't be the state, providing a long-term solution toward its road funding issues. But it would have let counties, through referendum, raise their sales taxes by a half a cent. This is something that passed in committee on a unanimous vote. Republican sponsors went before reporters earlier in the day and said that, you know, they were going to pass the bill. Really, in the assembly, with Republicans in charge, if a bill gets on the calendar, the rule of thumb is it's going to pass. And so it was pretty rare to see this bill just get kind of pushed down toward the end of the calendar throughout the day, and then suddenly they were done for the night and they didn't act on this.
So do we know why? Are there last-minute tweaks they're going to try to do, or what?
There are last-minute tweaks. I don't know if you know why exactly, because they didn't talk about it. They just ended the day. You could speculate a little bit. You have Republicans here in charge of the legislature. They're generally averse to tax increases. This is a bill that would allow for tax increases. So, I mean, for that reason, it was a little bit unusual to see it on the calendar to begin with. The sponsor, Representative Dean Knutson, said that he's going to add an amendment on there that would phase out wheel taxes, which are another way that local governments use to raise money for roads. So they would potentially gain one tool and lose another. That's if this comes back up. We don't know if it will.
So that's still up in the air, whether this assumed to be likely to pass bill is going to pass at all in this session. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
Yeah, the official line out of the Speaker's office last night was that discussions continue in the measure. They could just bring it up tomorrow. They could bring it up next week, but time's running out.
I recall hearing, I think, from the counties association, they like this. Local governments seem to be into it. They want to raise money to repair their local roads, but on hold for now.
Yeah, they like this. There's this coalition of environmental groups and some conservatives who are kind of an unlikely coalition when it comes to road projects, and they're not so fond of this, partly because it doesn't include transit, partly because they feel like it's sort of unfair to raise taxes at the local level.
And there have been calls for an audit of transportation spending in the state, too, from that coalition you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Conservatives, presumably because they don't want to spend money. Environmentalists, because they think money is being misspent on too much road development, I think was the argument.
Yeah, and that audit is ongoing. There are some people who say we got to wait until that comes out so that we know how the DOT is spending its money, if they're using rosy traffic projections when it comes to deciding where to build roads. This issue is a little different, though, on this this county sales tax, mm-hmm. because it's designed to just go to road repairs,
right,
where counties say they drastically need money. So that's why this was able to get support in committee, but as of yet, not on the assembly floor.
We'll move on from that one. The assembly approved a package of bills to increase, they're saying this is a property owner's rights package of legislation. A lot of it has to do with development on lakes and things like that. What was there?
It does. It's in a variety of ways, it would sort of tip the balance in decisions over whether to develop from more regulation to less. I mean, it would give landowners who live adjacent to lakes more power to develop their land. So, one big example that the bill would do is when it comes to dredging. A lakefront property owner right now has to get what's known as an individual permit from the DNR. So these are complicated. You have to go to, they go through DNR scientists. So a biologist would come through and say, what you would have to do exactly to make that to get the permit so that your dredging didn't disturb fish habitat. in many cases, you can't get that permit on lakes because dredging is pretty invasive for lakes, and so they don't always grant them. And so this would be, you let landowners get just a general permit, a lot easier to get. It would lead to a lot more dredging is the thought. This is something that has a lot of environmental groups, a pretty broad coalition of environmental groups, very concerned. They say it's going to destroy habitat.
Yeah, and the supporters are saying this gives more freedom to people who have bought maybe expensive lakefront property, gives them an opportunity to use that more fully.
Yeah, that the biggest investment most people will make in their lives is in their home. And this lets them, do more with that home, which they, bought with their own money. I mean, the balance there that critics are saying that is not being met is that when you're talking about lakes, they belong to the public under our Constitution through the public trust doctrine. And so there's always that balancing test when you deal with lakefront issues.
So that's through the Assembly Senate?
Not through the Senate yet, and that is something where, at least in the Senate committee, Republicans who chaired that committee were a little bit skeptical, said they wanted to make some changes before they advanced that bill. They've got a little more time, though, before the Senate adjourns for the year.
Talking to WPR's Sean Johnson, the clock is ticking. A lot of legislation on the table in the Assembly and the Senate. The Senate approved one, Sean, that would allow online voter registration, but change the way offline voter registration works a little bit. Can you sum that one up for us?
This is one that started out, the issue as a whole started out as a bipartisan bill. You had Democrats and Republicans on board with this plan that would allow Wisconsin to become, to join the growing list of states that allow for online voter registration. And the online voter registration would let you, if you have a driver's license or a state-issued ID, you could use that information to go and register online without having to go there in person. So the idea is this is convenient. People kind of expect it now. You do a lot more of your business online. Why not register to vote online? And so a number of states have done this. So it's not untested. And this is an idea that, as I mentioned, had broad bipartisan support. That bipartisan support really peeled away because of another piece of the bill that would phase out special registration deputies. And so these are people who work for groups or volunteer for groups like, say the League of Women Voters. They might go around to communities or nursing homes and go through and they would do the registering of people there. That would be phased out. Sponsors of the bill say you don't need those special registration deputies anymore, that special title or the special process, because when it's online, basically anybody can do it. They can go around, take their phone, their tablet, their laptop, and do a voter registration drive. Critics say, well, not everybody's exactly that computer literate, and not everybody necessarily has the IDs they need to do it online.
And this is one that's passed the Senate. Has the Assembly touched this one yet?
They have not touched this one yet. This was hung up in an Assembly committee for a while where the lead author there was saying she wanted to try to reach compromise to get people on board. But again, the clock is ticking.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says, hey, Assembly, finishing up the session next week. Is it like they're going to do a lot more before the adjournment happens?
They're going to do a lot more.
Yeah.
I mean, their calendars are going to be long. The Assembly and Senate were both very busy today. They had, if you look at public hearings and executive sessions combined, you had about 30 meetings today in the legislature. So, just to give you an idea of what that's like. Legislators come in, sit down, sit there for a few minutes, and then a number of them leave to go to another committee where they might sit down, take a vote, bounce to another committee. It's pretty chaotic. It's hard to devote a lot of attention to any of the bills that are going through in an atmosphere like that, but that's what you get at the end of session, especially when session ends this early.
Is there an issue that you are paying close attention to see if it happens by the time everybody adjourns?
There's a pretty long list of bills that I think are worth watching at this point. One thing that hasn't happened yet that the governor really called for in his State of the State speech is really the only thing he did call for is this higher ed package that he wanted to make college more affordable. You would think the odds are in his favor and that he's the governor and that his pretty much the only thing he asked for in this spring session, but that hasn't gone through yet. There's also this bill that's getting a lot of attention that's right now in the Senate, hasn't gone anywhere, that would privatize or allow for the privatization of water utilities in Wisconsin. It's pretty controversial, and we don't know what's going to happen there.
We'll be watching those. I'm sure you will, too. Sean, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Sean Johnson, Capital Bureau Chief for WPR News. He joined us to talk about the latest news from the state legislature.
Primary season is upon us, with some key voting dates approaching and new ID requirements in place for our state. We'll find out what you need to be ready to vote.
Neil Albrecht joins us now. He's Milwaukee's election commissioner. Neil, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, and good afternoon. It's great to be on the show.
Well, right about now, when people are thinking voting and politics, they're probably thinking presidential election, November, long way off. But we've got some stuff right around the corner to think about. What are some of the dates we should be watching for here in Wisconsin?
Well, in Wisconsin, we've got what's called the spring primary, and that's on February 16th. And then on April 5th, we have the spring election, which is also Wisconsin's presidential primary. So those are the two most immediate elections.
And these elections in the state, not counting that presidential primary you mentioned, these are what we call our nonpartisan elections here in the state. Is that right?
These are, and that requires voters to maybe do a little additional research on their candidates prior to turning out at the polls, because I think voters often look for political affiliations when they're voting. And as you identified, these are nonpartisan offices, with the exception of the presidential primary. So you won't see any political parties referenced on the ballot.
So what kind of elections show up in that category?
Well, for example, in the city of Milwaukee, we have mayor, we have alderperson, county, we have county executive and county supervisors. And then all the way up to the state level, we have state Supreme Court. There's also a lot of circuit court judges that are going to be on this ballot. But I think primarily if you think of local government, there are a lot of local government offices included in this spring election cycle.
And then looking ahead a bit on the calendar, August, we've got our primaries for partisan elections now. Is that right?
We do. In August, we'll be in the partisan primary. It's an election that voters are often not very fond of because it does require you to choose your preferred political party and then vote for candidates within that political party. If you cross-party vote, then your ballot gets rejected by the voting machines, and that often proves to be a little frustrating for voters.
Talking to Neil Albrecht, he's Milwaukee Election Commissioner, looking at the when and how of voting in Wisconsin starting next week with nonpartisan primaries here in the state. Neil, we've covered the when. Let's get to some of the how. Let's first of all talk about the state of the art with voter registration. If someone's recently moved here to Wisconsin or moved since they last voted, what do they need to do, if anything?
Well, they're going to need to re-register. So for any of these three categories, if, as you indicated, they are a new registered voter in the state of Wisconsin, they're going to need to register. Or if their address or name has changed since they last voted, they're going to need to re-register. And when you do register, it's important to be prepared. You're going to have to provide a proof of residence document. Bring a document with you. This could be your driver's license, a state ID. It could also be a utility bill, a bank statement, a communication from a unit of government, any other government ID. There's a pretty lengthy and comprehensive list of what could be acceptable proof of residence for registration purposes. The key is it must include your name and it must include your current address.
And can you do this or start the process online?
Online registration is not yet offered in the state of Wisconsin. You could certainly download a registration card, a registration form. It's actually too late for this February 16th election to register by mail. At this point, someone's best bet would to either be register at their clerk's office or at the election commission, or else in Wisconsin, you can still register to vote at your polling place on election day.
But definitely make sure if you're doing that, that you have everything you need.
Right. Definitely make sure that you have that proof of residence with you. You don't want that to be an obstacle to your ability to cast a ballot in the election.
And the big topic in election issues in Wisconsin for a long time now, the photo ID law. That is fully functional and it's in place now. Is that right?
Right. The photo ID law is in effect in the state of Wisconsin, and it certainly will be for these spring elections. And that is sort of an additional layer that most voters will be unfamiliar with in terms of the requirement to be able to vote a ballot in an election. It used to be, for example, as long as you were registered to vote, you could appear at your polling place, be issued a ballot, place that ballot in the voting machine. With the photo ID requirement, you're now going to have to produce something from the list of acceptable photo IDs, and that includes things like a Wisconsin driver's license, a state ID, a U.S. passport, a uniform services card, or a certificate of naturalization, and a few other documents. That's what will be required, the presentation of that photo ID before you can receive your ballot.
If somebody has a question about how they register at the polls, if their particular form of ID is valid, is there a good resource we can go to?
Absolutely. I think you could certainly go to our website, which is the City of Milwaukee Election Commission. That's just www.milwaukee.gov for gov. You could also go to the Wisconsin Government Accountability Board's website, and they have a campaign called Bring It to the Ballot that includes pretty comprehensive information about the photo ID requirement. I would add the photo ID that's used for photo ID purposes does not need to have a current address on it. And I could see if voters don't understand that, that being a deterrent to them turning out at their polling places on election day. So as long as you're registered, the only purpose of the photo ID is to confirm your identity through your name and through your photo. So if that address is incorrect, even if that address is in another municipality,
still works.
In the state of Wisconsin, it will be accepted, and it will meet the photo ID requirement.
Neil, thanks for joining us. That's Neil Albrecht, Milwaukee Election Commissioner.
Valentine's Day is less than a week away, which is great if you have a romantic partner, but it can be tough for those who don't or who are recently broken up. Breakups are hard for everyone, but they're even harder for some people. New research tells us why that is.
We want to hear from you about this. Why do you think some people take these breakups harder than others? What experience have you had with breakups? Are you the type of person who takes it really hard, or does it roll off your back and you bounce back pretty quickly? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Lauren Howe joins us now. She's a PhD candidate in social psychology at Stanford University, and she's one of the experts behind this new research. Lauren, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Why did you want to look at breakups specifically?
So my co-author, Carol Dweck, and I thought it was really interesting how much people might differ in whether the pain of rejection seems to linger for them. So we noticed that some people, more than others, seem to really struggle with recovering after a breakup. They seem to be more haunted by the ghosts of their romantic past. So we thought that presented a very curious puzzle. Why do some people seem to bounce back from bad experiences and relationships more readily than others?
So how did you go about researching that?
So we surveyed people in two different ways. So in one series of studies, we asked people to reflect on their own experiences with romantic rejection. We asked them to recall a time that they were rejected and it was very painful. And then we asked them some questions about their experiences. In other studies, we actually asked people to imagine being rejected. So we had them read a story where they imagined being either broken up with by a long-term partner or experiencing a maybe smaller rejection where they imagined meeting someone at a party, feeling a spark, and later overhearing that person say that they would never be interested in them romantically. And then we asked them some questions about how they would imagine responding in that situation.
So it sounds like these could be responses that deal more broadly with rejection, not just romance.
Yeah, so we wanted to focus on breakups because we think that they can be a very interesting kind of threat to the self. So it's really hard to have a person who you thought knew you really well leave you and to deal with that kind of pain.
Well, sounds like there were two kinds of people when it comes to this kind of romantic rejection. What kinds of responses did you see?
So one thing that really jumped out at us in this research was when we asked people to reflect on their rejection, there were very different stories that people told about the rejection. One group of people really seemed to link the breakup or the rejection that they had experienced to something about who they were as a person. So they were really likely to respond to rejection by worrying that it revealed something that was wrong with them, some kind of flaw or negative characteristic that they had. So it seems like for some people, rejection really caused them to question who they were and what the rejection revealed that was kind of deficient about them.
And what about the other kind?
So there were several other stories that people might tell themselves that didn't implicate the self in this way. So some people saw rejection as a very common human experience. They said, you know, everyone gets rejected. It's just, you know, kind of part of the way that, life goes. So they didn't take it as personally in that way. Some people did link rejection to the self, but they felt like they had the potential to change the thing that had been revealed to them through this experience. So, for instance, they might say, I learned that I was very bad at communicating in this relationship, but after moving on from that relationship, I've been able to be clearer about my expectations and have become better at communicating and have been able to have successful relationships since.
So you use the word stories, the kinds of stories that we tell ourselves after a breakup. Does this really just sort of get at the narratives, the way we explain what happened?
Yeah, I think humans are natural storytellers, especially when dealing with complicated events. We often craft a narrative to help us understand the things that happen to us. And I think this can be especially true for painful events like breakups.
We're talking right now with Lauren Howe from Stanford University, talking about new research on why some people take breakups harder than others, looking at breakups as we head into the lead up to Valentine's Day. And we're going to go ahead and take a call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jason is with us in Eau Claire. Jason, hi.
Hi.
What is your story?
I guess I've been through a few breakups now. I'm 35 years old, been through five-year relationships, two-year relationships. And when they've ended, I've always felt like it was my fault, like I was a failure, like I had done something wrong within the relationship to cause it to go wrong, and really tried to work even when the relationships weren't going as well as, you know, a real relationship should go. I've tried to stretch it out. And then once they did end, it was devastating. They've all been very, very hard for me and taken a long time for me to get over as, you know, trying to move on from it. And I guess what I've learned from that is that it's not necessarily my fault as a failure in a relationship, but the fact that, you know, I wasn't necessarily with somebody that I matched up well with. And instead of trying to match up well with somebody I didn't, that I should be looking for somebody that I do match up with, and that kind of helped me get through it.
So you sort of changed your approach over the years. It used to be, it sounds like you were hard on yourself and told yourself that it was you who was wrong, and now you're realizing that maybe it's about the match instead. Does that sound right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm not choosing the right people. I'm choosing people that are basically willing to be with me instead of people that are, you know, a good match and somebody that I should be with.
Jason, thanks a lot for that. And Lauren, sounds familiar from your research there, but it does sound like, you know, Jason gives us hope. He went from being one kind of person, telling himself one kind of story, to the other kind of story, the more positive kind.
Yeah, I think changing the stories that we tell ourselves about rejection could be a really powerful way to help us cope with rejection in a better light. There's so many factors that can go into the end of a relationship, and I think recognizing the factors that maybe aren't all about you could be a very positive step.
Now, most people, after a relationship ends, there's a time of reflection. You call this a healthy behavior. You look back on it. You think about what went wrong, how you behaved, how they behaved. When does that kind of healthy reflecting become something that's more unhealthy?
So I think it can become very unhealthy when that process of reflection really makes you doubt your basic worth as a person, whether you feel like there's some terrible flaw that you have that you wouldn't be able to change when you see this kind of new terrible knowledge about yourself. So I think it's very positive when you think about how something that went wrong could be different in other relationships and how you could work on it, but that's maybe not so positive when you instead kind of see it as being condemned to having this negative trait.
So going back to Jason there, who's changed the stories that he told himself and the way he reflected on things to a more positive, moving forward mentality, how could he have gotten there maybe sooner? How can we change if we're someone who does take things pretty hard? We blame ourselves. We think this is the way I am. I'm flawed. How can we make it better quicker?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of different things that could be done. I think one is to get into a habit of questioning our self-narratives. I think a lot of people's gut reaction is to have this kind of inward-turning response where you kind of wonder, what was it about me? Why wasn't I good enough? And I think, you know, to change the questions that you start asking, to think, what were the other factors that were at play? Was there something wrong with the timing? Were we maybe just on different pages with what we wanted out of relationships? And kind of changing the questions that you're asking yourself could be one step. And I think also thinking about the fact that people can and do change all the time. More and more, I think there's evidence that we can develop who we are. We can become better at communicating, and that can really positively impact relationships. So I think believing in that potential for change might also be key.
And another thing you look at here is the loss, the potential loss of self, because when you first start seeing someone romantically, sometimes with friendships too here, I guess we're talking about, you can take on their interests and all of a sudden you're this new exciting person who does all these other things. But then when you break up with a partner, all of a sudden sometimes that stuff can go away. How does that translate into all of this?
Yeah, so I think one thing that makes relationships very satisfying is getting to know someone and kind of taking on their identity and interest as aspects of your own self. And I think sometimes people wonder, like, well, in order to prevent the pain of a breakup, should I just not get as close to people? Should I not kind of let myself intertwine with their self? And I would say, you know, that is a very positive aspect of relationships, and it can make things more painful. So, for instance, a lot of research has shown that in relationships where people feel like they've really learned a lot from their partner, where they adopted a lot of new perspectives or took on new interests, the loss of that relationship is particularly painful. But I think what we looked at was not just how people might change their size of their self after a breakup. So people who, you know, felt like they learned a lot from their partner often feel like they have a smaller sense of self after the breakup. But feeling like your sense of self is smaller is very different from kind of questioning your basic worth as a person. So that's where we found that things can tend to go very wrong, and where there might be ways to cope in better ways.
Does it help for people to continue whatever new things they began with a partner? Like, let's say they get into paragliding or something with someone. Can they just keep doing that and that lessens the blow?
Yeah, I think that would be actually something very interesting to look at, whether maintaining those new aspects of yourself might be helpful in coping with a breakup. I think, you know, distractions themselves might be helpful, but it would be really interesting to look at in future research.
We're talking with Lauren Howe right now from Stanford University, talking about new research on why some people take breakups a lot harder than other people.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. How have you responded in the past to breakups, that kind of what might feel like rejection? How have you dealt with it or gotten over it in the past? And what do you think about this new research that you're hearing from our guest? And which kind are you? Are you the kind of person who gets really hurt in that breakup, or are you able to move on? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on our Central Time Facebook page.
We're picking up our discussion now about new research on breakups with Lauren Howe of Stanford University.
Research finds that there's kind of two kinds of people when it comes to breakups. People who take it hard, take it as a rejection of who they are, a failure on their part, and people who have a different kind of story that they tell themselves. Maybe they get over it a little easier. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're willing to share your breakup story, your experience, and how you got to over it, and which category you fit into, and what did you learn from it? What advice do you have for others who are maybe going through that now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Lauren, looking at the way people view their mental state, what are the differences there in terms of people who think of their self as sort of flexible and people who see themselves as more fixed?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So We found in our research that the people who struggled the most with rejection, so who tended to continue to be really upset over breakups even years later, and who worried that they might never find someone who really loved them, tended to be these people who told the stories about the self in the light of rejection. So the next question that we wanted to ask was, what causes people to link rejection to something about who they are as a person, to some kind of fundamental flaw? And what we found was that this really depended on people's beliefs about personality. So whether people saw personality in general as something that can change and be developed, whether they thought people can mold their traits over time, or whether people believe that personality tends to be fixed and stable, your traits kind of become set in stone. And we found that people who had this latter view, who believed that personality is fixed, were the people who were more likely to tell these damaging stories that linked rejection to the self.
So if you are one of those people who sees yourself as more fixed, what do you do to change that?
Yeah, so one thing that's very interesting is our beliefs about personality are things that appear to be malleable. So we can change our beliefs about personality. I think there's some very interesting psychology research that speaks to both views about personality, some showing that traits can be heritable, for instance, and some showing that traits can be worked on and developed. So things that we've thought of as maybe very basic traits like empathy are actually things that can be developed through training. So I think you could start to look more into research that speaks to the fact that you can change important attributes and think about the potential for change in your own life.
We're going to go to our callers now. We've got Amy on the line with us from Milwaukee. Amy, hi.
Hi.
What is your breakup story?
Well, I am single at 44, so I mean, it would take me all day to go through my breakups, but I always feel extremely upset for like a day or two, and it always empowers me because I just know in my life I just strive to be better.
So
I just always feel like I can't wait to run into this guy next year because I'm going to look better, I'm going to be more successful, and I'm going to be wiser. And that's the way I feel about breakups.
Okay, so you use it as kind of a springboard to a better you.
Absolutely. It ends up always inspiring me.
Amy, thanks a lot for that. So a lot of silver linings there for Amy. Maybe that's why she's single. Seems like she gets better every time. What do you think about that, Lauren?
Yeah, I think that's a very amazing response to have in the light of rejection. And some of the stories that I've read when people have shared their personal experiences with rejection have had these really just inspirational themes about how they saw rejection as a stepping stone to becoming a better person, or how even rejection could be a key to a brighter future, to really kind of improving your life and knowing more about yourself.
Amy, appreciate that call. And we're going to go next to Tom in Appleton. Tom, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Appreciate you taking my call.
And what did you want to share?
Oh, basically is that I was in a relationship, engaged to be married, in love like everybody else, I guess. And she had kids, so we discussed getting fixed not to have kids because, she had kids, and that was a great idea, whatever. And then, she got pregnant by somebody else.
Oh, boy.
Which didn't go over really good, but for the most part, I would say it's all about good family and friends.
Good family and friends. So you leaned a lot on your support network, and did that help you through?
100%. And to this day, her kids, who basically called me dad at that point when this all happened, and now the kids are all grown, her kids are all grown, we're actually, friends on Facebook, and we get along fantastic. Friends and family, and keep a cool head, and things work out. Keep a cool head, and friends and family, and life is good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Tom, appreciate that. And Tom taking a very balanced approach there to something that could have been pretty traumatic. He's turned it around. He sounds like he leans a lot on his support network. Do you talk and look at all Amy, Lauren, rather, about the friends and family and their role?
Yeah, we actually haven't in our research, but I think a lot of other psychology research really speaks to the power of social connection and friends and family, and how they can be a really important source in helping people deal with stressful situations.
And so, Lauren, going forward, we're heading into Valentine's Day. Some people feeling great, enjoying it. Other people not so much. What advice do you have for someone who has trouble getting over breakups?
Yeah, so I think you know, especially around Valentine's Day, we can't help but sometimes to remember the painful things that have happened in past relationships. So I would encourage people to think about how those different chapters of their lives kind of can add to who you are as a person and add to your overall life, and how those painful moments can really be springboards for growth.
Lauren, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
That was Lauren Howe, PhD candidate in social psychology at Stanford University. She joined us there to talk about her new research on why some people take breakups harder than other people.